and raking a bloody groove across his face. With a cry, the consul let go of Clary and threw up his arms. But Hugo had circled back and was slashing at him viciously with beak and claws. Malachi staggered backward, arms flailing, until he struck the edge of a bench hard. It fell over with a crash. Unbalanced, he sprawled after it with a strangled cry, quickly cut off. Clary raced to where Malachi lay crumpled on the marble floor, a circle of blood already pooling around him. He had landed on a pile of glass from the broken ceiling, and one of the jagged chunks had pierced his throat. Hugo was still hovering in the air, circling Malachi's body. He gave a triumphant caw as Clary stared at him. Apparently, he hadn't appreciated the consul's kicks and blows. Malachi should have known better than to attack one of Valentine's creatures, Clary thought sourly. The bird was no more forgiving than its master. But there was no time to think about Malachi now. Alec had said that there were wards up around the lake, and that if anyone portaled there, an alarm would go off. Valentine was probably already at the mirror. There was no time to waste. Backing slowly away from the raven, Clary turned and dashed toward the front doors of the hall and the glimmer of the portal beyond. Chapter 20. Weighed in the Balance. Water struck her in the face like a blow. Clary went down, choking, into freezing darkness. Her first thought was that the portal had faded beyond repairing, and that she was stuck in the whirling, black in-between place where she would suffocate and die, just as Jace had warned her she might the first time she'd ever used a portal. Her second thought was that she was already dead. She was probably only actually unconscious for a few seconds, though it felt like the end of everything. When she came awake, it was with a shock that was like the shock of breaking through a layer of ice. She had been unconscious, and now, suddenly, she wasn't. She was lying on her back on cold, damp earth, staring up at a sky so full of stars it looked like a handful of silver pieces had been flung across its dark surface. Her mouth was full of brackish liquid. She turned her head to the side, coughed and spat and gasped until she could breathe again. When her stomach had stopped spasming, she rolled onto her side. Her wrists were bound together with a faint band of glowing light, and her legs felt heavy and strange, prickling all over with intense pins and needles. She wondered if she'd lain on them strangely, or perhaps it was a side effect of nearly drowning. The back of her neck burned as if a wasp had stung her. With a gasp, she heaved herself into a sitting position, legs stretched out awkwardly in front of her, and looked around. She was on the shore of Lake Lynn, where the water gave way to powdery sand. A black wall of rock rose behind her, the cliffs she remembered from her time here with Luke. The sand itself was dark, glittering with silver mica. Here and there in the sand were witchlight torches, filling the air with their silvery glow, leaving a tracery of glowing lines across the surface of the water. By the shore of the lake, a few feet away from where she sat, stood a low table made out of flat stones piled one on the other. It had clearly been assembled in haste, though the gaps between the stones were packed in with damp sand. Some of the rocks were slipping away at angles. Placed on the surface of the stones was something that made Clary catch her breath, the mortal cup, and laid crossways atop it, the mortal sword, a tongue of black flame in the witchlight. Around the altar were the black lines of runes carved into the sand. She stared at them, but they were jumbled, meaningless. A shadow cut across the sand, moving fast, the long black shadow of a man, made wavering and indistinct by the flickering light of the torches. By the time Clary raised her head, he was already standing over her. Valentine. The shock of seeing him was so enormous that it was almost no shock at all. She felt nothing as she stared up at her father, whose face hovered against the dark sky like the moon, white, austere, pitted with black eyes like meteor craters. Over his shirt were looped a number of leather straps holding a dozen or more weapons. They bristled behind him like a porcupine's spines. He looked huge, impossibly broad, the terrifying statue of some warrior god intent on destruction. "Clarissa," he said, "you took quite a risk portaling here. You're lucky I saw you appear in the water between one minute and the next. You were quite unconscious. If it weren't for me, you would have drowned. A muscle beside his mouth moved slightly. And I wouldn't concern yourself overmuch with the alarm wards the Clave put up around the lake. I took those down the moment I arrived. No one knows you're here. I don't believe you. Clary opened her mouth to fling the words in his face. There was no sound. It was like one of those nightmares where she would try to scream and scream and nothing would happen. Only a dry puff of air came from her mouth, the gasp of someone trying to scream with a cut throat. Valentine shook his head. Don't bother trying to speak. I used a rune of quietude, one of those that the Silent Brothers use on the back of your neck. There's a binding rune on your wrists, and another disabling your legs. I wouldn't try to stand. Your legs won't hold you, and it'll only cause you pain. Clary glared at him, trying to bore into him with her eyes, cut him with her hatred, but he took no notice. It could have been worse, you know. By the time I dragged you onto the bank, the lake poison had already started its work. I've cured you of it, by the way. Not that I expect your thanks. He smiled thinly. You and I, we've never had a conversation, have we? Not a real conversation. You must be wondering why I never really seem to have a father's interest in you. I'm sorry if that hurt you. Now her stare went from hateful to incredulous. How could they have a conversation when she couldn't even speak? She tried to force the words out, but nothing came from her throat but a thin gasp. Valentine turned back to his altar and placed his hand on the mortal sword. The sword gave off a black light, a sort of reverse glow, as if it were sucking the illumination from the air around it. I didn't know your mother was pregnant with you when she left me, he said. He was speaking to her, Clary thought, in a way he never had before. His tone was calm, even conversational. But it wasn't that. I knew there was something wrong. She thought she was hiding her unhappiness. I took some blood from Ithuriel, dried it to a powder, and mixed it with her food, thinking it might cure her unhappiness. If I'd known she was pregnant, I wouldn't have done it. I'd already resolved not to experiment again on a child of my own blood. You're lying, Clary wanted to scream at him. But she wasn't sure he was. He still sounded strange to her, different. Maybe it was because he was telling the truth. After she fled Idris, I looked for her for years, he said. And not just because she had the mortal cup, but because I loved her. I thought if I could only talk to her, I could make her see reason. I did what I did that night in Alicante in a fit of rage, wanting to destroy her, destroy everything about our life together. But afterward I... He shook his head, turning away to look out over the lake. When I finally tracked her down, I'd heard rumors she'd had another child, a daughter. I assumed you were Lucian's. He'd always loved her, always wanted to take her from me. I thought she must finally have given in, have consented to a child with a filthy downworlder. His voice tightened. When I found her in your apartment in New York, she was still barely conscious. She spat at me that I'd made a monster out of her first child, and that she'd left me before I could do the same to her second. Then she went limp in my arms. All those years I'd looked for her, and that was all I had with her, those few seconds in which she looked at me with a lifetime's worth of hate. I realized something then. He lifted Malartek. Clary remembered how heavy even the half-turned sword had been to hold, and saw as the blade rose that the muscles of Valentine's arm stood out, hard and corded, like rope snaking under the skin. I realized, he said, that the reason she left me was to protect you. Jonathan she hated, but you... She would have done anything to protect you. To protect you from me. She even lived among mundanes, which I know must have pained her. It must have hurt her never to be able to raise you with any of our traditions. You are half of what you could have been. You have your talent with runes, but it's been squandered by your mundane upbringing. He lowered the sword. The tip of it hung now, just by Clary's face. She could see it out of the corner of her eye, floating at the edge of her vision like a silvery moth. I knew then that Jocelyn would never come back to me because of you. You are the only thing in the world she ever loved more than she loved me. And because of you, she hates me. And because of that, I hate the sight of you. Clary turned her face away. If he was going to kill her, she didn't want to see her death coming. Clarissa, said Valentine, look at me. No. She stared at the lake. Far out across the water, she could see a dim red glow, like fire sunk away into ashes. She knew it was the light of the battle. Her mother was there, and Luke. Maybe it was fitting that they were together, even if she wasn't with them. I'll keep my eyes on that light, she thought. I'll keep looking at it no matter what. It'll be the last thing I ever see. Clarissa, Valentine said again, you look just like her. Do you know that? Just like Jocelyn. She felt a sharp pain against her cheek. It was the blade of the sword. He was pressing the edge of it against her skin, trying to force her to turn her head toward him. I'm going to raise the angel now, he said. And I want you to watch as it happens. There was a bitter taste in Clary's mouth. I know why you're so obsessed with my mother. Because she was the one thing you thought you had total control over that ever turned around and bit you. You thought you owned her, and you didn't. That's why you want her here right now, to witness you winning. That's why you'll make do with me. The sword bit farther into her cheek. Valentine said, look at me, Clary. She looked. She didn't want to, but the pain was too much. Her head jerked to the side almost against her will, the blood dripping in great fat drops down her face, splattering the sand. A nauseous pain gripped her as she raised her head to look at her father. He was gazing down at the blade of Malartek. It, too, was stained with her blood. When he glanced back at her, there was a strange light in his eyes. Blood is needed to complete this ceremony, he said. I intended to use my own, but when I saw you in the lake, I knew it was Raziel's way of telling me to use my daughter's instead. It's why I cleared your blood of the lake's taint. You are purified now, purified and ready. So thank you, Clarissa, for the use of your blood. And in some way, Clary thought, he meant it, meant his gratitude. He had long ago lost the ability to distinguish between force and cooperation, between fear and willingness, between love and torture. And with that realization came a rush of numbness. What was the point of hating Valentine for being a monster when he didn't even know he was one? And now, Valentine said, I just need a bit more. And Clary thought, a bit more what? Just as he swung the sword back, and the starlight exploded off it, and she thought, of course, it's not just blood he wants, but death. The sword had fed itself on enough blood by now. It probably had a taste for it, just like Valentine himself. Her eyes followed Malartek's black light as it sliced toward her, and went flying. Knocked out of Valentine's hand, it hurtled into the darkness. Valentine's eyes went wide. His gaze flicked down, fastening first on his bleeding sword hand, and then he looked up and saw, at the same moment that Clary did, what had struck the mortal sword from his grasp. Jace. A familiar-looking sword gripped in his left hand stood at the edge of a rise of sand, barely a foot from Valentine. Clary could see from the older man's expression that he hadn't heard Jace approach any more than she had. Clary's heart caught at the sight of him. Dried blood crusted the side of his face, and there was a livid red mark at his throat. His eyes shone like mirrors, and in the witchlight they looked black as Sebastian's. Clary, he said, not taking his eyes off his father. Clary, are you all right? Jace! She struggled to say his name, but nothing could pass the blockage in her throat. She felt as if she were choking.
She can't answer you, said Valentine. She can't speak.
Jace's eyes flashed. What have you done to her? He jabbed the sword toward Valentine, who took a step back. The look on Valentine's face was wary but not frightened. There was a calculation to his expression that Clary didn't like. She knew she ought to feel triumphant, but she didn't. If anything, she felt more panicked than she had a moment ago. She'd realized that Valentine was going to kill her, had accepted it, and now Jace was here. And her fear had expanded to encompass him as well. And he looked so,
destroyed. His gear was ripped halfway open down one arm, and the skin beneath was crisscrossed with white lines. His shirt was torn across the front, and there was a fading erotse over his heart that had not quite managed to erase the angry red scar beneath it. Dirt stained his clothes, as if he'd been rolling around on the ground. But it was his expression that frightened her the most. It was so bleak. A rune of quietude. She won't be hurt by it. Valentine's eyes fastened on Jace hungrily, Clary thought, as if he were drinking in the sight of him. I don't suppose, Valentine asked, that you've come to join me, to be blessed by the angel beside me? Jace's expression didn't change. His eyes were fixed on his adoptive father, and there was nothing in them. No lingering shred of affection or love or memory. There wasn't even hatred, just disdain, Clary thought. A cold disdain. I know what you're planning to do, Jace said. I know why you're summoning the angel, and I won't let you do it. I've already sent Isabel to warn the army. Warnings will do them little good. This is not the sort of danger you can run from. Valentine's gaze flicked down to Jace's sword. Put that down, he began, and we can talk. He broke off then. That's not your sword. That's a Morganstone sword. Jace smiled, a dark, sweet smile. It was Jonathan's. He's dead now. Valentine looked stunned. You mean... I took it from the ground where he'd dropped it, Jace said without emotion, after I killed him. Valentine seemed dumbfounded. You killed Jonathan? How could you have? He would have killed me, said Jace. I had no choice. I didn't mean that. Valentine shook his head. He still looked stunned, like a boxer who'd been hit too hard in the moment before he collapsed to the mat. I raised Jonathan. I trained him myself. There was no better warrior. Apparently, Jay said, there was. But, and Valentine's voice cracked, the first time Clary had ever heard a flaw in the smooth, unruffled facade of that voice. But he was your brother. No. He wasn't. Jace took a step forward, nudging the blade an inch closer to Valentine's heart. What happened to my real father? Isabel said he died in a raid, but did he really? Did you kill him like you killed my mother? Valentine still looked stunned. Clary sensed that he was fighting for control. Fighting against grief? Or just afraid to die? I didn't kill your mother. She took her own life. I cut you out of her dead body. If I hadn't done that, you would have died along with her. But why? Why did you do it? You didn't need a son. You had a son. Jace looked deadly in the moonlight. Clary thought, deadly and strange, like someone she didn't know. The hand that held the sword toward Valentine's throat was unwavering. Tell me the truth, Jace said. No more lies about how we're the same flesh and blood. Parents lie to their children, but you... You're not my father, and I want the truth. It wasn't a son I needed, Valentine said. It was a soldier. I had thought Jonathan might be that soldier, but he had too much of the demon nature in him. He was too savage, too sudden, not subtle enough. I feared, even then, when he was barely out of infancy, that he would never have the patience or the compassion to follow me, to lead the clave in my footsteps. So I tried again with you. And with you I had the opposite trouble. You were too gentle, too empathic. You felt others' pain as if it were your own. You couldn't even bear the death of your pets. Understand this, my son. I loved you for those things, but the very things I loved about you made you no use to me. So you thought I was soft and useless, said Jace. I suppose it will be surprising for you, then, when your soft and useless son cuts your throat. We've been through this. Valentine's voice was steady, but Clary thought she could see the sweat gleaming at his temples at the base of his throat. You wouldn't do that. You didn't want to do it at Renwick's, and you don't want to do it now. You're wrong. Jace spoke in a measured tone. I have regretted not killing you every day since I let you go. My brother Max is dead because I didn't kill you that day. Dozens, maybe hundreds, are dead because I stayed my hand. I know your plan. I know you hope to slaughter almost every shadow hunter in Idris. And I ask myself, how many more have to die before I do what I should have done on Blackwell's Island? No, he said. I don't want to kill you, but I will. Don't do this, said Valentine. Please, I don't want to... To die? No one wants to die, Father. The point of Jace's sword slipped lower, and then lower until it was resting over Valentine's heart. Jace's face was calm, the face of an angel dispatching divine justice. Do you have any last words? Jonathan. Blood spotted Valentine's shirt where the tip of the blade rested, and Clary saw, in her mind's eye, Jace at Renwick's, his hand shaking, not wanting to hurt his father, and Valentine taunting him. Drive the blade in 3 inches, maybe 4. It wasn't like that now. Jace's hand was steady, and Valentine looked afraid. Last words, hissed Jace. What are they? Valentine raised his head. His black eyes as he looked at the boy in front of him were grave. I'm sorry, he said. I am so sorry. He stretched out a hand as if he meant to reach out to Jace, even to touch him. His hand turned, palm up, the fingers opening. And then there was a silver flash, and something flew by Clary in the darkness like a bullet shot out of a gun. She felt displaced air brush her cheek as it passed, and then Valentine had caught it out of the air. A long tongue of silver fire that flashed once in his hand as he brought it down. It was the mortal sword. It left a tracery of black light on the air as Valentine drove the blade of it into Jace's heart. Jace's eyes flew wide. A look of disbelieving confusion passed over his face. He glanced down at himself, where Malartek stuck grotesquely out of his chest. It looked more bizarre than horrible, like a prop from a nightmare that made no logical sense. Valentine drew his hand back then, jerking the sword out of Jace's chest the way he might have jerked a dagger from its scabbard, as if it had been all that was holding him up. Jace went to his knees. His sword slid from his grasp and hit the damp earth. He looked down at it in puzzlement, as if he had no idea why he had been holding it or why he had let it go. He opened his mouth as if to ask the question, and blood poured over his chin, staining what was left of his ragged shirt. Everything after that seemed to Clary to happen very slowly, as if time were stretching itself out. She saw Valentine sink to the ground and pull Jace onto his lap as if Jace were still very small and could be easily held. He drew him close and rocked him, and lowered his face and pressed it against Jace's shoulder, and Clary thought for a moment that he might even have been crying. But when he lifted his head, Valentine's eyes were dry. My son, he whispered. My boy. The terrible slowing of time stretched around Clary like a strangling rope, while Valentine held Jace and brushed his bloody hair back from his forehead. He held Jace while he died, and the light went out of his eyes. And then Valentine laid his adopted son's body gently down on the ground, crossing his arms over his chest as if to hide the gaping, bloody wound there. Ave, he began, as if he meant to say the words over Jace, the Shadow Hunter's farewell. But his voice cracked, and he turned abruptly and walked back toward the altar. Clary couldn't move, could barely breathe. She could hear her own heart beating, hear the scrape of her breathing in her dry throat. From the corner of her eye she could see Valentine standing by the edge of the lake, blood streaming from the blade of Malartek and dripping into the bowl of the mortal cup. He was chanting words she didn't understand. She didn't care to try to understand. It would all be over soon, and she was almost glad. She wondered if she had enough energy to drag herself over to where Jace lay, if she could lie down beside him and wait for it to be over. She stared at him, lying motionless on the churned, bloody sand. His eyes were closed, his face still. If it weren't for the gash across his chest, she could have told herself he was asleep, but he wasn't. He was a shadow hunter. He had died in battle. He deserved the last benediction. Ave atque vale. Her lips shaped the words, though they fell from her mouth in silent puffs of air. Halfway through, she stopped, her breath catching. What should she say? Hail and farewell, Jace Wayland? That name was not truly his. He had never even really been named, she thought with agony. Just given the name of a dead child because it had suited Ballantyne's purposes at the time. And there was so much power in a name. Her head whipped around and she stared at the altar. The runes surrounding it had begun to glow. They were runes of summoning, runes of naming, and runes of binding. They were not unlike the runes that had kept Ithuriel imprisoned in the cellars beneath the Wayland Manor. Now very much against her will, she thought of the way Jace had looked at her then, the blaze of faith in his eyes, his belief in her. He had always thought she was strong. He had showed it in everything he did, in every look and every touch. Simon had faith in her too, yet when he'd held her, it had been as if she were something fragile, something made of delicate glass. But Jace had held her with all the strength he had, never wondering if she could take it. He'd known she was as strong as he was. Ballantyne was dipping the bloody sword over and over in the water of the lake now, chanting low and fast. The water of the lake was rippling, as if a giant hand were stroking fingers lightly across its surface. Clary closed her eyes. Remembering the way Jace had looked at her the night she'd freed Ithuriel, she couldn't help but imagine the way he'd look at her now if he saw her trying to lie down to die on the sand beside him. He wouldn't be touched, wouldn't think it was a beautiful gesture. He'd be angry at her for giving up. He'd be so disappointed. Clary lowered herself so that she was lying on the ground, heaving her dead legs behind her. Slowly she crawled across the sand, pushing herself along with her knees and bound hands. The glowing band around her wrists burned and stung. Her shirt tore as she dragged herself across the ground, and the sand scraped the bare skin of her stomach. She barely felt it. It was hard work, pulling herself along like this. Sweat ran down her back between her shoulder blades. When she finally reached the circle of runes, she was panting so loudly that she was terrified Ballantyne would hear her. But he didn't even turn around. He had the mortal cup in one hand and the sword in the other. As she watched, he drew his right hand back, spoke several words that sounded like Greek, and threw the cup. It shone like a falling star as it hurtled toward the water of the lake and vanished beneath the surface with a faint splash. The circle of runes was giving off a faint heat, like a partly banked fire. Clary had to twist and struggle to reach her hand around to the stele jammed into her belt. The pain in her wrists spiked as her fingers closed around the handle. She pulled it free with a muffled gasp of relief. She couldn't separate her wrists, so she gripped the stele awkwardly in both hands. She pushed herself up with her elbow, staring down at the runes. She could feel the heat of them on her face. They had begun to shimmer like witchlight. Ballantyne had the mortal sword poised, ready to throw it. He was chanting the last words of the summoning spell. With a final burst of strength, Clary drove the tip of the stele into the sand, not scraping aside the runes Ballantyne had drawn, but tracing her own pattern over them, writing a new rune over the one that symbolized his name. It was such a small rune, she thought. Such a small change. Nothing like her immensely powerful alliance rune. Nothing like the Mark of Cain. But it was all she could do. Spent, Clary rolled onto her side just as Ballantyne drew his arm back and let the mortal sword fly. Malartek hurtled end over end, a black and silver blur that joined soundlessly with the black and silver lake. A great plume went up from the place where it splashed down, a flowering of platinum water. The plume rose higher and higher, a geyser of molten silver, like rain falling upward. There was a great crashing noise, the sound of shattering ice, a glacier breaking, and then the lake seemed to blow apart, silver water exploding upward like a reverse hailstorm. And rising with the hailstorm came the angel. Clary was not sure what she'd expected, something like Ithuriel, but Ithuriel had been diminished by many years of captivity and torment. This was an angel in the full force of his glory. As he rose from the water, her eyes began to burn as if she were staring into the sun. Valentine's hands had fallen to his sides. He was gazing upward with a rapt expression,